welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We are giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. and Monday mornings at 1 a.m. We stream live at that time at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page, and we archive the programs there. They're called podcasts in the 21st century. As far as I'm concerned, they're still archives, but you know, semantics, what are you going to do? We are also on SoundCloud and iTunes, as well as the radio show's page, as I said, and we also link to our guest's website. So we ask you to go to their website to continue your research and investigation, to continue your growth, to continue your progress, your process, however you want to phrase it, so that you can continue moving forward. I have to say that there are times when I lose, I don't know, I don't know if it's, I lose my mind, and then I'm listening to my favorite music, and suddenly a song comes up that reminds me that you shouldn't be losing your mind. You should just be calm and cool and collected, and it's like, okay, and then I get back into the, and then it happens again, and 5 minutes later, and it's like, okay, it's almost to the point where I want to give up even trying, because it's like, I can't seem to hold on to that, which generates something in our lives that we have called stress, which then generates into dis-ease, and then generates into a bunch of other stuff that we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about it from the standpoint of something new for you. Basically, we're going to help you to transform your life, career, and business right now, this minute. But wait, I have something else I need to do first before I can do this. And that is introduce our guest, who is the author of The Stress to Success Formula, which is transform, and we'll spell that out for you in just a moment. Dr. Marilyn Joyce, thank you so much for joining us on the program.
My pleasure, Richard. Thank you for having me on the show.
The whole concept of stress, and this is rather interesting, in spite of the fact that people love quoting, they love make quoting things. One in particular, I guess it's a Chinese saying that we live in interesting times, I think is the way the phrase goes. Or may you live in interesting times. And they are, to say the very least, interesting. We never know from one day to the next if we're even going to be here, because of the some of the people who are supposedly in charge are talking to other people around the world who are in charge of their place. And yes, this is a rather pessimistic phrase, but nonetheless, I say it tongue in cheek. If that were to happen, just let me be at ground zero. I don't want to be a survivor. I've seen the ravages of a man's inhumanity to man over the centuries, as well as in the past century, as I was growing up even. I don't want to be one of those people. I really, not a fun place to be, but let's talk about getting to a fun place to be through your 9 steps of transform. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. That's right. There are 9 letters in transform.
that's right.
Tell me, first of all, how you define success.
Success is a multifaceted thing, Richard. And I think all too often in our culture, success has become all about how much you've acquired, material success. And a few years ago, I learned really quickly that, you know, that is something that can come and it can go. And there's, you know, you just never know when that's going to happen. I mean, we've seen it throughout history, as you mentioned, history. You know, people have had all kinds of material things, and then due to whatever has happened in their country, their culture, their life, they've lost it all. You know, it might be through political stuff, or it might be through weather conditions. It might be through a tsunami. You just don't know. And so what I woke up to was that true success is how we deal with life from day to day. How, you know, it's not what happens to us in our lives, but how we relate to or respond to what happens to us. And then how you take that and live a life that is full, meaningful, And well, as I get older, I'm looking at leaving a legacy worth remembering. You know, what is it that I can do to make this world a better place before I leave, so that it's a better place than when I leave than it was when I arrived here. So I think that's more about what I define success as. I mean, there's so much more, but that really is the nuts and bolts of it. And, you know, after interviewing hundreds of people, as I was going through a transition in my own life a few years ago, I realized that, you know, truly when it came down to it, that was what everyone was seeking, was how to find balance and meaning and purpose in their lives, living a purposeful life.
No, well, I was just going to say that I've come to the realization, and it's been many, many years ago that I came to this. Unfortunately, there are times, as I mentioned earlier in the beginning of the program, where I forget that somehow, some way, I don't know how or why, but there's something inside of me that says my life has meaning. I don't know why, and I'm not sure what that meaning is exactly. All I know is it has meaning. Ergo, if my life didn't have meaning, it wouldn't matter if I did what I'm doing now or if I went out and raped and pillaged and plundered, because my life has no meaning. But
exactly.
It does, and so I'm in that perplexing place where I have to maintain my equilibrium, if you will, in order to continue to live out that purpose, which I suppose I have found, at least at this moment. I don't know what it's going to be tomorrow. I mean, that's what's interesting is I've talked to so many people on this program who have talked about, as you mentioned, finding one's life's purpose. And some feel that, well, maybe there's a general life's purpose for your whole life. But then at the same time, sometimes your purpose changes from moment to moment or day to day or year to year.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that's called flexibility, to be able to move from what you thought was your purpose at the particular point in time and be open to a higher calling. You know, that's kind of the word that I use there. But, you know, something that is a download from somewhere else, from mm-hmm. God, from spirit, from the universe. It's this message that comes to you that really basically is saying, hold on, here's another direction. Here's something that may be more meaningful for you at this time. And I think it's all about one thing growing on top of another. I mean, if we were to, I remember a friend of mine saying a while back, when we embarked on actually it was a friend and business partner who is no longer a business partner at this point in time, but basically, you know, he said, if I had known that it was going to be this challenging, I would never have stepped on this journey with you, you know, to write the book and to put the information out there in a big way. And I said to him, if we were really to look at our lives, if we knew ahead of time, you know, hindsight is 20/20, if we knew ahead of time about what we were going to go through in any aspect of our lives, we would never go through them. In other words, we would never even live. We would give up on life before we even start. Because life is not, that's not what life's about. It's about really taking that journey day by day by day. And whatever you're confronted with, it's finding a solution to move through it. And to, yeah, at the same time, make choices that allow you to maintain balance, you know, to reduce anxiety, to reduce the anger, the sadness, the fear-based thinking and consciousness, and just deal with the challenges and the and see them as opportunities for growth.
Yeah, but sometimes I just want to be a six-year-old saying, I don't want to.
Yeah, and you know what? It's okay to do that, too. It's okay to have those moments where you say, I'm not doing it. That's it. I'm taking time out.
I'm taking my ball and I'm going home.
Time out.
Yeah, yeah. I'm taking my ball and I'm going home.
Exactly.
unfortunately, wherever we happen to be, it is kind of like our home, and we can't really leave where we are, per se. I chuckle sometimes when I think about the phrase from the 60s when kids get out of high school.
Yeah.
They go off to college. Well, they don't even go off to college. I'm not going to college, Mom, Dad. I'm going to go hither and yon to try and, quote-unquote, to find myself.
Yes.
And what we've discovered on this program, as I've discovered through my life, you don't have to go anywhere. Because to find yourself, you have to go within. And that's part of what Transform is all about. Talk to me about stress. We already know the manifestations thereof, and of course you've kind of dove into that. This whole aspect of trying to, this is one of the techniques I know some people use, and I use it. I've had to. Literally disconnect from the rest of the world. I want to take my phone, the very phone that I have you connected to our setup here to conduct this interview, and I want to walk out to a place that's called Stern's Wharf here in Santa Barbara, walk out to the end of the pier, and either throw me and or my cell phone overboard. However, I can swim, which is fine. I can make it back to shore. However, I throw my cell phone out there, and of course I'm polluting the oceans, and we need to stop doing that. But that's kind of how a lot of people feel. They really do. They want to disconnect. Social media, from my, and this is just my humble opinion, social media is anything but social. Matter of fact, I think that what's starting to come out, and this is very interesting, is that social media is actually becoming a very destructive force in our society and civilization around the world, not just in this country. One in particular element is when you see young people, I don't care what their designation is, the millennials or Gen X or Y or Q or L or baby boomers, they're looking down at their screens, right? And there are two things. One is there's now a new dis-ease, and it has to do with the neck. And their neck is tilted down so much, and so now they're experiencing poor posture. Now, that's just one element. Another one is, and this is cosmetic, I saw a commercial for a cream that you put on your neck if you've been tilting your head down looking at your screen to get rid of the crease lines in your neck from leaning your head down. And I'm sitting here going, you're going to charge me $29.95 a month for X number of months for this cream when I've got a free solution. Lift your head up.
Yes.
And someone said to me just the other day, technology is the culprit. Technology. It can be quite a benefit, but right now it's killing us.
Yes, it's true. And in a lot of other ways as well, Richard. And that was interesting. I did a short podcast of couple of days ago, or actually just the end of last week, and in that it was a young millennial who interviewed me, and he was saying something about, you know, the whole aspect of how the whole thing with social media and cell phones and this technological world is that it has caused us to separate from each other. Now, you know, we have quick messages back and forth, we text each other and so on, and there's pluses and minuses to all of that, but the bad part is that we're not really connecting in true, meaningful, deep conversations.
True.
And that's really challenging. I mean, when you think about when you've gone through a really tough time, what is the one thing that really can change your demeanor, your inner self? It's to be able to sit down and talk it out with someone, whether it's with a wife, a husband, a friend, a family member, somebody you trust, a clergy person, whoever. It's, you know, it's being able to sit down and talk it out.
Mm-hmm.
And in this day and age, if you can't say it in less than 140 characters, it's probably not going to get heard or listened to.
Well, remember, they did double that. So now you can do it in 280.
Oh, wow.
Sorry about that, Chief.
Yeah, really.
But you're right. I had a Facebook account about two or three, maybe 4 years ago. And one of my problems was that there was a piece of news that came across the Facebook page, because at that time I wasn't being overly discriminatory of who I got posts from. And I found out about the death of one of my broadcast mentors from Phoenix, and his death and his death of his wife. And it was very sad. You know, but I probably would have found out about it some other way. But right. this whole aspect of friending people and liking this and that and the other thing, I got to a point where I said no. And so I went through the process of deactivating and deleting my account, which astounds me. It's like, I want to deactivate and delete my account. Okay, we're going to give you 7 days to think about it. I don't need 7 days. I want it gone now. So I got rid of it. And a few months back, I went back on and I found out how to create a page for the radio show. And so on and so, and I was actually posting all of the shows and their broadcast times and this and that. And then I missed a week. And then I missed 2 weeks. And then I went back and I was going to post the old programs that had already aired and it wouldn't let me. And then I got to thinking, well, I missed 2 weeks. And this is going to happen more times than not. And I'm the only one dealing with this. I don't have a staff, you know, an entourage.
Right.
And I'm just sitting here thinking, you know, I mean, it's great that I've connected with my parents, who I can phone, my nieces, my sister's daughters, who I can phone, my sisters, my brother, who I can phone. And I'm seriously thinking, saying bye-bye to Facebook for a second and final time, because I just, I mean, I have a website. What more does anyone really need? And I understand all of the arguments in favor thereof. But it's almost like, it's stressful to have these things because you have to take care of them.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, that's one of the things about it that I found as well, that it becomes a very stressful thing when you're constantly having to update everything. And, I will say that I took on a challenge as well. I mean, the students at the colleges where we've been working on my book and different projects around the book gave me a challenge of going on LinkedIn and Instagram and for 90 days. And it's actually been over 100 days now, and I only missed a couple of days the whole time. And I found actually it's finding the right social media to actually get the most engagement and enjoy it, mm-hmm. and to actually enjoy it.
Yeah.
And I think what happens with Facebook is we get so caught up in how many likes do we have, how many friends do we have, and that's not the same experience that I've had with Instagram and LinkedIn.
Yeah.
You know, and I think, and there was actually a really great comment on one of the LinkedIn pages that I just read last night. And it was, forget about the likes, provide value.
Yeah.
And I think that's what you're doing with the radio show, and that's what I'm doing with my books and so on. It's about really forgetting about popularity contests. You know, instead, let's get back to, like you said, picking up the phone and calling someone and saying, hey, I miss you. I love you. I'm sorry we haven't been in contact for a month or two, but I'm thinking about you, you know, or writing an email to someone. What happened to doing those kinds of things that have, you can actually say more and express more? I think that there is a trend towards doing more of that again. And a lot of that, believe it or not, it is some of that is due to the millennials who are saying, hey, I want to get off this merry-go-round. I don't like it anymore.
Yeah, it's their fault.
Even they're doing it.
Yeah, I just want you to know it's their fault. No.
Yeah, right.
There isn't really anybody. I wouldn't even blame Zuckerberg. It's not his fault. It's how we choose to use it. It really is. It's kind of like a hammer.
Yeah.
I can either use it to drive in nails or drive a point home, which wouldn't be a good thing to do. Unless you're a judge, unless you're a judge.
Yes.
And by the way, how many things in your experiences thus far with Facebook, how many things have you liked? How many things have you clicked on the like thumbs up icon?
You know, it varies from day to day, month to week to week, month to month.
I know exactly how many I've liked. Zero.
Really?
Zero. And I don't friend anybody that I don't know.
Yeah.
And LinkedIn, I'm with you on LinkedIn. That's how I have come across so many different people for this radio broadcast. More and more. I'm finding more people who are credible and who are very interesting people, who have very fascinating stories to tell. But let's shift our gears here without stripping them. And let's talk about how how we can transform our lives, career, business right now, this minute. I'm curious, if we were to whip through the 9 steps for the transform steps, which is what they are, folks, would someone be able to, just through our conversation, and I know we want people to go and pick up the copy of the book as well, but would they be able to at least begin the process of literally transforming their lives today? Because it has been said, you are where you are today because of the choices that you have made in the past. So,
Yes. Where
do you want to be tomorrow? And now this flies into my bailiwick of giving people choices and knowledge of those choices. What choices are you going to make today that will get you where you want to be tomorrow? Not where you will end up, but where you want to be.
Yes. And that's the key element to the whole thing called stress, is that we don't realize it, but we in fact have control. Stress is completely under our control. It's a choice. And I say that several times throughout the book, but in my seminars, I've been saying that for years. I didn't want to believe that myself, that it was that much of a choice of mine. But the truth of the matter is that every moment, like you said, we make a choice. Am I going to do this or am I going to do that? Am I not going to do this or am I not going to do that? And every time we make a choice, it determines whether we're going to experience stress in our lives or not.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, to answer your question, yes, if somebody were to embrace the 9 steps and even just choose one of those steps to work on immediately or to implement immediately, I should say. I don't really like the word work on or the words work on, but to really realize that, we are self-determinant individuals, and if we were to take a step and work it, to embrace it, to make it a part of our lives on a daily basis, we can literally transform our lives. It isn't even critical to use all 9 steps ever or right away. It's to find the one thing that you are most willing to do right now,
mm-hmm.
and then do that. And that was the same thing that I used to speak about with my instant energy book. There were 5 keys in that. It was finding one of the hundreds of steps within those 5 keys that you were willing to do right here and right now, and implement that. Implement it for, set a goal of implementing it for, I would say 21 days, but 3 months is a good rule of thumb, because whatever we do, it takes about 21 days to, for example, set the foundation for a new habit, new way of being. But it takes about 3 to 4 months to really embrace it, to create a cellular memory shift. So, again, going back to it, just taking one of these steps would change your life if you're willing to implement it.
Right.
It all comes down to, what are you willing to do? What is it that stops you? And then getting to the crux of how can we shift you from that place?
Right.
Exactly.
Well, what I'm going to do before we go to break is I'm going to let our listeners know about these 9 steps in just a word or two. And again, we're talking about the word transform.
Yeah.
So you have to know how to spell. And doggone it, if you don't know how to spell, we're going to get you to learn how to spell. No remedial courses for you in college. You're going to be able to
Right.
This is my philosophy. If I can get somebody to read and write and do basic math and so forth so they can get into college without needing remedial courses, guess what? They hit the ground running so they can immediately go after their dreams, instead of having to still work through that stuff. So I'm not sitting here going to blame anybody. But the transform steps are talk it out, which is referring to talk therapy, relax, rest, relax, rejuvenate, attitude of gratitude, nutrition excellence daily, nutritional excellence daily, social connections and social networks. We have talked a little bit about that. Follow your heart.
Mm-hmm.
Offer a helping hand of service and support. Rejoice in your successes and the successes of others. Reconnect with God. And mindfulness, meditation, observe your thoughts, words, actions, and feelings. And as I shared at the beginning of the program, I've been observing and I've been wanting, and I'm working on that myself. We're going to continue further conversations here with the author of The Stress to Success Formula, Transform Your Life, Career, and Business. Dr. Marilyn Joyce is my guest. Stay tuned. We will be right back.
Tell me your story.
And welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, along with Dr. Marilyn Joyce, and we're talking about her latest book, which is The Stress to Success Formula, Transform Your Life, Career, and Business Now. And if you missed the nine steps, go back to the first half of the interview, the end there, where we popped on through those. First of all, let me ask you about something that I was looking at a little while ago, and I thought it was very, 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 very profound in this respect, because it's something that, in one sense, I want to do. And I have to be careful, you know, to be careful of what I'm asking for. You know how they, you know, you hear that. Be careful what you ask for. Because 3 years ago, as of this conversation, you made a decision to unload everything, and go on a 1,000-day journey. Talk to us, first of all, about how in the world you came to that place in your life when the whole dynamic of capitalism and free enterprise is to get more and more and more, which means you're in direct violation of the prime directive of getting more and more and more. Why did you get rid of everything? And literally, was it literally everything? I mean, how far did you go?
I mean, literally, I woke up from a recurring nightmare where I was being... And this sounds very traumatic, but it was exactly what happened. It was literally a nightmare where I was being axe murdered by my landlady's son-in-law. And I was living through a nightmare in that place. I had a series of losses the year before, personal losses, both of someone I cared for deeply in my family, and also my home as a result of medical bills for that experience. So what happened was that I moved into a rental home, and I thought that I was going to somehow pull my life together. And at that point in time, it was just one experience after another. It was like, you know, I wasn't listening. I was not paying attention to the message I was getting from God and the universe, that it was time for a huge shift, a huge change. So I moved into this rental home, and one thing led to another. We ended up in lawsuits, and, you know, I'm not a litigious person, so here I am all of a sudden, you know, I'm dealing with less than, very little integrity on the other side, let's say. And the one thing led to another, and I had this nightmare, came downstairs, looked around at all my beautiful things, and I got this message, powerful message, saying, you can't take it with you. You can't take it with you. And I remember going, you know, upstairs, you know, showering and trying to, you know, wash this thought out of my system, and it wasn't going anywhere. So I meditated and prayed for 3 hours, literally. My knees ached because I literally got on my knees. I literally got on my knees and prayed and then meditated. And I just said, as I fell into slumber that night, I said, God, when I wake up in the morning, I want an answer. I don't know what is going on here, but I want an answer. And that's when I woke up, and I saw these words across the room, journey of 1,000 days. I closed my eyes 3 times, you know, kind of rubbed my eyes, looked at them, journey of 1,000 days. And at the time, I really didn't have a clue where that was going either. And then within a couple of days of you know, again, praying, meditating, and really asking, you know, because prayer to me is where you're asking God and the universe for answers, and meditation is where you sit and allow the answers to come to you. And I talk about that extensively in Instant Energy. But basically, I then had a conversation with a client, friend. We shared coaching for each other. She's a business coach. I'm a health coach. And she was having a meltdown. And this is a person that if you looked at her life, you'd say, what does she have to melt down about? You know, everything in her life is working. And I remember paraphrasing her life for her and then saying, so what matters now? And both of us realized right now that that was the key thing that was happening, was that nobody asked each other that. And yet if we look at our lives, our whole lives, if you've been to hell, this became the tagline, if you've been to hell and lived to tell after losing someone, something, or everything you thought was important to you, you've asked the question, what matters now? And it became this message or this question that brings people together globally, regardless of race, creed, color, religion, philosophy, all of that. And so, because we've all asked it, it doesn't matter where we come from, it doesn't matter what our background is, we, at some point in our lives, we will ask ourselves that. And actually, more and more younger people are asking that question. That's been quite surprising. And so that was it. I thought, okay, I'm going out for 1,000 days, and here it is being about 1,000 days since that all happened. And we just put it together that I have actually lived through the first 1,000 days of this, and now we're going to embark on the next 1,000 days in 2019. But basically what happened was I started interviewing people who came to get my stuff, because that was it. I'm going to sell everything I own, give away everything I own. I'm going to be a free agent to be able to travel around the continent and then the world, interviewing people and asking that question. Well, as it turned out, I ended up spending about 2 years of that time trying to get rid of all my stuff in storage and asking people that question, because people would come and they would tell me their stories, and they were unbelievable stories. And from that, it led to the writing of the book, The Stress Success Formula, because I talk about that at the very beginning of this book, where actually what happened was I ended up having, you know, discussions with people from the military and finding out that, you know, there's about 26 suicides a day, 25 veterans and one active duty. There's about 200 suicides a day in general. And then I was shocked to find out that the highest incidence of suicide in the professions is attorneys. And
I thought it was dentists.
Then I discovered there's a suicide every 30 seconds on planet Earth.
Jeez.
So it became this, oh my gosh. And the starfish story came into my life, and I realized that this is what it's all about. It's about changing lives one life at a time, you know, saving lives one life at a time.
Yeah, I didn't.
And so that became the quote for the book as well.
Yeah, I didn't know that it was attorneys. I thought it was dentists who were number one, but I know they're up there. I know they're up there.
Dentists are the number one in the medical world, but overall in the professions as a whole, it's attorneys.
And I had also heard FAA, air traffic controllers, are also up rather high as well. And it's because of the type of work they're doing, because of the fact that they hold the lives of people literally in their hands. A dentist does, a lawyer does, if he fails to get the client off or whatever the case might be, fails to win. And maybe that's part of the problem is that, I'm doing conversations with people about all these different subjects. For example, I can especially appreciate FAA, air traffic controller, who loses a plane. But when you talk about a dentist, lots of stuff can go wrong there. And an attorney can end up, instead of justice being served, it's win or lose. I mean, that's the mentality now. In the medical profession, it's not what's best for you. It's we're going to keep you alive, no matter what the cost, which has also been a conversation we've had, that our medical outlook right now is that our science has allowed us to live longer and longer and longer. But then the question is, at what price? And it's getting more and more expensive to stay alive in some instances, instead
yeah.
of, which I can understand now where that first, that early book of yours regarding health and wellness comes from, to help people to do it naturally without needing a bunch of various chemicals. And I'm being introduced more and more and more and more to the various methods of more holistic, if you will, naturopathic, whatever other term, organic, whatever other term you want to use, rather than pharmaceutical.
Absolutely. And the thing is that it's more enduring. You know, that was one of the key things when I was starting to talk to all these military personnel, ex-military personnel, and then, one of them actually said to me, several have since then, but the one that stood out was the first one, because when you hear it from someone the first time, you say, wow, I never thought about that. I mean, I know all about illnesses, but then I'm standing there at my storage units, and I'm hearing this person say to me, yeah, I was over in Iraq and Iran, and, I heard guns going off 24/7. I came home, and I'm in bed with my wife, and I hear guns going off 24/7. And, it was like, and bombs, I got bombs going off 24/7. And I'm standing there thinking, you know what? We never think about that. So then they turn to drugs because that's what they're told they should be taking, right? They go to the military hospitals, the veterans hospitals, and they're put on all these drugs, which don't help, because what happens is then they're on one drug and then they need another drug to combat the aftermath of the first drug and so on and so forth. So they never get well, and then we see so many of them who, end up on the streets or whatever. Now, take that the next step. When this particular person who told me this he made the decision that he was going to find a solution and get off of the drug, and he did. He created an amazing product called AnxietyX, and I've tried it myself, because sometimes there's stress in my own life. And so I thought, well, okay, it's all natural. Let's just try it out and see what happens. Amazing. It calms you right down, all natural. And that's the key. It's like, if we can do that with a natural supplement, just think if you were to do that with your life every day, with just using simple five-minute strategies. And, of course, that's what I was known for with Instant Energy. That's what's in this book as well with the Stress to Success formula, our five-minute strategies. It doesn't have to take hours. You don't have to revert to using even a supplement. You can use these simple strategies that only take a 5-minute period of your time. You utilize them or you implement them, like taking time out, going for, earthing, a walk on the earth, which is called earthing, right? Take your shoes and socks off, walk on the earth or the grass. It balances your blood plasma, which in turn then relates to how well your body absorbs any nutrients that you happen to eat or ingest, and then you start to feel calm again.
Wait a minute.
That's just one simple step.
Are you telling me that they have come up with a new term for walking barefoot on the ground?
Yes.
Are you
yes, they have.
It's like I'm waiting for them to come up with a new term for a woman giving birth. And actually, the term would be get the hell away from me. You look what you've done to me. At least that's the stereotypical response that sometimes you will hear in humorous settings when talking about giving birth.
Absolutely.
But I find it interesting that we come up with these new terms for things we've been doing for centuries. And it's just wild. It's just wild. Dr. Marilyn Joyce is my guest, and we're talking about the Stress to Success formula. And I want to touch upon a couple of these as we move forward in our program here, because I think it would help folks. Some of them are somewhat self-explanatory. We would certainly encourage you to go to her website and pick up a copy of the book. And we're going to give that website to you here in just a couple of minutes. But let's talk a little bit. We just started on the Nutritional Excellence Daily step. And we talked about, of course, the social connections and social networking in that regard. But here's something that is, I think, hard for a lot of folks. Because it would require, now you did this. You did this step back in 2015. And for many of us, we'd sit here going, I have so much stuff and I've got all these friends and I've got this family, and yet my heart is telling me to go and do this. And we're not talking about someone who's psychotic and needs to be institutionalized here. We're talking about, but we are talking about people who, and I know you know the stories of people who've done this, who literally, as a matter of fact, I was watching a movie with Bryan Cranston. And I'm trying to remember the name of, it was called, Wakefield was the name of the film. And, this guy, I think he was a broker and had a beautiful home and family and wife and everything and two daughters and a wife. And, it was just marvelous. And, everything was going so well. And one day something switched in him. He went up into the attic above the garage. And he stayed there, hiding from his wife and kids, for literally almost a year. And he watched through the window, this big, giant, round window, which was very symbolic of the big eye, you know, watching.
Yes.
And he would watch, and he was pondering the decision he'd made throughout the course of the weeks and months that would pass. He was scrounging. He turned his phone off, took the battery out, put his cash, credit cards, didn't use them. He was scrounging in the garbage cans throughout the neighborhood, nearly got into an altercation with this Russian mob that apparently around 2 o'clock every morning went through all the garbage in the neighborhood and took all of the good stuff, right? And he almost got beat to death by this mob. And here he is. He's just disappeared. He actually makes the cover of a magazine a few months after his quote unquote disappearance. And then he meets this couple who live either next door or two houses down from him. One is a young man with Down syndrome. Another woman, the woman is, and they are a couple. I don't know if they're married per se, but who may also have Down syndrome or autism. And they befriend him and they try to help him. And he begins to realize that he needs to go back, but he made that decision. And we all, sometimes you obviously must have felt something like that, where if I make this decision, it's going to change everything.
Yes, it's true. I mean, it's like, When it happened, I mean, I had, on some deeper level, Richard, I had actually thought about it several times. You know, I thought about how, because I love to travel and I love to meet people in different cultures, and I'm a product of the 60s, so I did hitchhike around the world at that point in time. And then, of course, I went from seeing the world as a hitchhiking hippie, as my family called me, to seeing the world in, you know, higher class, you know, as a speaker and a writer and, you know, traveling the world and speaking and, you know, kind of seeing it through, you know, higher class eyes, or whatever one would call it, you know, more affluent eyes. And I realized that I wasn't really getting to the crux of who people are really all about, or what they're all really all about, the way I had when I was hitchhiking around the world. Now, do I want to hitchhike around the world? Probably not. But I do say that our stuff gets in the way. One, when you have, the more you own, the more responsibilities you have, the more your thoughts are centered around how to protect those things. I mean, goodness gracious, most of us have alarm systems to protect our stuff. And the big news today is storage units have become the big business to have, because everybody has got too much stuff for their home, so now they've got a storage unit. And it just becomes more and more stuff. I mean, I do have a storage unit right now that has my, you know, books and CDs and things that I'm gradually selling those, because those are things that I produced, and I don't want to just give them away. I want to actually, people value things that they pay for. So I do want to sell those kinds of things. But all my personal stuff, I have either given away, most of it I've given away, or sold. And it is freeing. People don't realize that stuff has such a hold on us energetically. And when you just free yourself of it, it's amazing.
Yeah, but I have a library that's like the library at Alexandria.
Oh, and I had that too, Richard. I mean, I literally donated 300 to 400 cases of books.
Oh,
I did. But you know what? Nowadays, you can get almost every book that you ever had in that library. You'll find it at some point in a digital form.
Exactly.
For a dollar.
Well, and...
or less.
Yeah. Or for example, music. I still have the albums that I collected from the age of probably 10 or 11 years old. My very first album, the very first one I ever purchased, I still have. Maybe not in the best of condition.
Goodness.
Oh, yeah. It was actually the Partridge Family of all groups. I'm a 10-year-old. You know, you're into that stuff. But I have almost every one of John Denver's albums, Harry Chapin's albums, Dan Fogelberg's albums, and many, many others, and also records that I've collected over the years from different radio stations. One gentleman, he actually gave me probably 100 or more of these comedy albums going back to the 40s or 50s. And on and on.
Oh, my goodness.
And it's like, I want to digitize these. Some of this stuff probably wouldn't be available digitally, and I would have to do it myself. But nonetheless, you're absolutely right. I don't buy music much anymore. The last one I bought was a compilation of Denver's that was released following his passing. I subscribe to, actually, I use the free version of Spotify. And I create my playlist, and I don't mind the ads. I mean, you know, we're in America. It's capitalism and free enterprise. I'll listen to the ads.
That's right.
so that I can then listen to my music, and it's okay. So you're absolutely right. And then the same thing. I used to collect the movies of the Christmas Carol with Scrooge, all of the different versions going back to 1938. And the one with Murray and with George C. Scott and on and on and on. It's a Wonderful Life. I used to have a copy of that as well. But again, it's like you said, all this stuff is available digitally. I would rather have Netflix keep the collection that I can access whenever I like, you know.
Absolutely.
You know. And yet there would be one book that I would keep that I have was given to me at the age of 21. By a dear friend of mine who we've had on the program a number of times. And the book was entitled The Impersonal Life. And I still have the original copy. I actually had to get it rebound, which I'm glad I did. And I have it in a leather or actually it's just a pouch to protect it. And I carry it with me almost everywhere I go, and I'll pull it out. But I even have it on Audible. I have it as a PDF on my phone. So that, again, it's digitized. So you're right. Everything that in that regard we can access, we don't have to give that up. And I did the same kind of thing before we left Phoenix, although I went to used bookstores with boxes and boxes and boxes of books, because obviously doing a program like this, you collect them.
And I was absolutely.
And I was actually able to get a few dollars or a few pennies, if you will, for each of the books. And then, of course, they would resell them. And that was fine. I didn't mind that. But at least I got rid of them, whether it's donated or otherwise. I just figured, you know, hey, I can use, extra folding money, as they say, which is also becoming a little passe. Hard to have a digital folding money in that context. This is, to me, fascinating stuff. Let's talk about one of the others as well as we are obviously going to eventually rapidly come close to the end of our program. One of the others, and this kind of goes to the generic life's purpose, offer a helping hand of service and support. And I've heard more than one individual doing something, and these people were doing something totally different from one another. But their life's purpose was almost the same, and it was basically to be of service.
Yeah.
To be of service. Talk to us about that step there.
Well, what happens is when we give a helping hand to somebody else, we're not just helping them. We're really helping ourselves as well. And I think that's what people don't realize is that when you help someone, you're giving them a helping hand, you're supporting them, it can change the whole trajectory of their life and yours. And, you know, I always think back to this one story that I included in the book, and I'll just really give a quick overview. I was in a store. There was a woman there. She was looking pretty down and sad. And she had a lot of things like hammers, nails, ropes, and so on. And I just looked at her, and I smiled, and I said, hi, how are you today? And she just frowned. And there was something that drove me not to leave. I was ahead of her in the line. I got outside. I waited for her. She came out. We ended up having a discussion. I just said to her, you look pretty sad. Is there anything I can say or do to help you, support you, or be there for you? And before I knew it, I found out she was going to go home that day and commit suicide. What ended up happening was, while I stood there, she went back into the store, returned everything. We went next door to the local cafe restaurant, had a glass of wine, and continued the conversation over some light dinner. And that woman is alive today, happily married. But had I not offered a helping hand that day, and there's different ways you can offer a helping hand. It can be walking an older person across the street who can't see very well. There's all kinds of things. It doesn't have to be that dramatic. But just smiling at someone can change their life. Offering them support in some way, a helping hand, can literally change their lives. But it changes yours as well, because you realize how we are all interconnected. And what we do for someone else, we're doing for the good of the planet, for the good of the universe. We're doing it for everybody. It's an energetic frequency that goes out.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's not just for that one individual.
No.
And the thing that it saddens me so, not only in regards to people who decide to leave early, you know, but those who are asked to make the ultimate sacrifice for their country. And I say their country because it's, in some cases, they're not asked, they're told. But what saddens me is the loss of potential. What could we have achieved as a society, as a civilization, if only these people didn't have to depart prematurely for whatever the reasons? What potential individuals could have contributed if they had been given the kind of information about health and wellness and preventative maintenance, shall we say, if only they knew. And many people, we know the information's out there, but a lot of people don't access it. A lot of people are given misinformation. It fascinates me how we'll go through an entire year, and you'll have one particular food that will be both good and bad for you maybe four or five times in that year.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, okay, you're just confusing me. So I won't even eat it. You know, I love it, but I won't eat it. And on and on and on. And that's what saddens me, is where we could be today if these people had lived out their life's purpose. Some would say, well, but that was their life's purpose, to serve us and so that we have the freedom to. And it's like, I'm sorry. I have a real problem with sacrificing human life in that way. It just, I'm not saying that, you know, I don't want to get into, you know, patriotism and politics or anything, but you see where I'm coming from?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the whole thing behind, for example, the Journey of 1,000 Days is also the idea of creating peace on Earth. Because when we get to a place of compassion for others and we do help each other, we can't kill each other. If you love someone, you can't do hateful things.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, if we could teach more, and that's what, you know, giving a helping hand is all about. It's about loving people, caring about them, you know, seeing yourself in them and them in you. And then from there, you know, you become an inspiration. You know, it's kind of like Mother Teresa. You know, I have that quote, not all of us can do great things, but we can all do small things with great love.
Mm.
And I think that's the key.
Yeah. And I have to tell you, I am one of the lucky few who had the privilege of being in her presence when she was in Phoenix, Arizona. And I can't remember the year. All I know is that that we were that I was there. And oh my gosh, it was just an incredible event when she was visiting our town back, I think it was in the 80s, as well as Pope John Paul II. He was in Phoenix for a trip there back in the 80s, early 90s. We were actually high atop the convention center looking across the street at the Basilica in downtown Phoenix. And there he was up on the balcony and so on and so forth. Just remarkable people that are out there. And yes, okay, we have to give them their due, that there are also some pretty despicable individuals down through history. That's where a lot of people, they really get stressed out. Okay? They really get stressed out. And we have to find a way to, how do I put this? I don't want to say to cope with it, but to understand it better. You know, and it's almost like, okay, if you're going to give credence to the wonderful good people like the Mother Teresa's and the Pope John Paul II's, well, and you also have to give credence to, you know, the Saddam Husseins and the Hitlers and the Genghis Khans and so on and so forth, because they all played a role that has brought us to where we are today. I mean, bizarre as that sounds, without all of these people playing their parts, we would not be where we are today. Some would say, yeah, see, we wouldn't be here if it weren't for. Yeah, but it's all of the parts working together, isn't it?
It really is. And I think, you know, truly the one thing that we always say is you can't know light without darkness, right? Mm-hmm. You can't know the light without the dark. And we all know that most of us, if not all of us, have gone through what we call the dark night of the soul. So we have our beautiful, bright times in our life, and then we have, you know, a time where we are literally going through the dark night of the soul. So it's like we can't know real joy unless you've experienced real unhappiness. You know, that type of expression we hear, I think there's a lot of truth to that. I wish that wasn't the way it was, but that's called humanity. You know, now, do we have to have the murders and the killings and the, you know, the rampant violence and all of those things? My hope and prayer is that as humanity becomes more conscious, you know, as consciousness evolves, that we'll get to that place where we don't have to kill each other, that we can literally come from that simple, doing simple things for each other in a loving way, with tolerance and acceptance for all that exists. And just, I guess the time will tell what's going to unfold, won't it?
Absolutely. Now, what's also interesting is, in this discussion, when I get into this murky water, so to speak, I use the example on the macro level of the universe. I realize it's kind of big, okay, but think about it. We can sit here on planet Earth and we can go through and we can list all of the good and the bad, right? The pluses and the minuses, right? Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But when you start taking a look at what's going on out in the universe, you have things flying around helter-skelter all over the place, right?
Yeah.
Is it good or is it bad? All right. Well, some would say, well, yeah, but if it hits Earth and we have an extinction event, that's bad. Well, okay, you know. But there's that wonderful little poem. I don't know if you recall this, the story of this man who had a son who they found these horses, or they bought the, I forget how they came in contact with them, wild horses. And the son was out there trying to tame one of them, fell off the horse, broke his leg. Well, that's bad. Well, his friend who was with him says, well, who's to say? Goes on with the story that then the next day the military came along and started conscripting people. And since he had a broken leg, he didn't go to war. Oh, well, that's good. And his friend says, well, who's to say? And of course, the story goes on and on and on.
Mm-hmm.
So when you take a look at the universe and everything that's going on out there, and I remember seeing a program just recently on 60 Minutes. They were talking about the Hubble telescope and how they've calculated the number of stars, not planets, but stars that are in the universe. It's like, it's like 10 to the 24th power, 24 zeros, right?
Yes.
Okay. Is there really chaos, or is that just what the universe is doing? It's neither good nor bad. Again, exactly. Who's to say?
Yeah.
So when we bring
it's
it back
all
down,
perception.
Right, we bring it back down to the micro level of our planet. Yeah, we saw, oh, and I use the term in man's inhumanity to man. That's bad.
Yes.
Well, who's to say?
Yeah.
So it is. You're right. It is a matter of perception. I want to talk about one more element before we wrap up the interview here, because I have been working very hard to understand the concept. I think I'm getting there. Mindfulness meditation. Meditation, simple meditation wasn't good enough. Quantum meditation wasn't good enough. Now it's my mindfulness meditation. Observe your thoughts, words, actions, and feelings. And I do tend to do that, at least as far as the observation. I don't know about meditation. I take the words of, I believe it was Teresa of Avila, who says that God is among the pots and the pans. And so I kind of like to think that, you know, the divine is wherever I happen to be, and I try to focus in that respect. But let's talk about this concept, this way of, I suppose, centering ourselves, transforming. It's the last step. Mindfulness meditation. What does that mean to you?
Well, it really is about being completely, totally where you are in this very moment, where your focus is on one thing. Now, in India, many years ago, decades ago, when I was studying yoga there, it was really learning to be mindful of a mantra. So that's one way you can do it. There's so many different ways you can do this, but it's being mindful of a mantra and repeating a mantra over and over again. But one of the simplest ways to be completely mindful is to be mindful of your breath. And so it's like just focusing totally on the breath as you breathe in and as you breathe out. So that all, and you just keep taking your mind back to that breath. As you're breathing in and you're counting the you know, up to four or eight or whatever, you know, your rhythm is. And then focusing on the breath in, holding the breath, releasing the breath, that's another form of mindfulness meditation. It can be as simple as walking along the street or the beach. If you're walking along a street, it could be, or in a park, it could be mindful of a tree, focusing your entire attention upon that tree and being grateful for the tree. I mean, it sounds crazy, but these are just simple ways to be completely mindful in the moment. And what happens is, you know, just focusing on, learning to focus on one thing, it can be, you know, what you're doing is you're focusing on how you're feeling in that moment. Any thoughts that are coming through your mind or into your mind, any feelings, any emotions, any discomfort, any challenges that arise as you're doing it, it's being mindful of all of those things. It's not about discarding them or discounting them. It's actually allowing everything that comes into your being to be there and to be mindful of what you are experiencing in that very moment. It's an amazing experience. I mean, it's one of the things I've been teaching for many, many years. And there's a good reason for it, because when people become mindful, they actually, of everything that they're doing, what happens is that we've watched people go from being suffering with addictions and different kinds of problems with chronic pain and tinnitus, for example, and that disappears. Mm. It's been amazing. And people working with, you know, who are going through cancer, and we've watched them through being actually focusing mindfully on the cancer cells disappearing, cancer cells imploding or exploding or, you know, just basically disintegrating, and the cancer goes away. You know, it disappears. They go into remission. I mean, it's just all about focusing your attention on one thing at a time, but allowing whatever comes up to come up, and then acknowledging it and releasing it. Mm. It's a beautiful process. And like I said, you don't have to sit in a cross-legged position on the floor or on a cushion. You can be out walking on the earth, doing what we call earthing.
Earth walking, yeah, earthing, okay.
Yeah.
I just find that funny. It is kind of cute. I like it, but it's really interesting. And I'm wondering what they're going to come up for the 21st century term for breathing. Because vaping has already been taken. I have to say how excited I am about the work that you're doing and what you're bringing to the table for our listeners. And I encourage people to investigate. Now, I can give out both an email address, but I want to make sure that we give out the website address for the book in particular, the stress2successformula.com. It's all spelled out right there, the stress2successformula.com. And people can also get in touch with you through your email address, which is Dr. D.R. Marilyn Joyce, MarilynJoyce. There's two Y's in that web email address, and that's at gmail.com. So Dr. Yeah. Marilyn Joyce, DR for doctor, DR Marilyn Joyce @gmail.com. And then again, a reminder that the website address is the stress2successformula.com. There's also, I believe, am I correct? It's an 800 number that's available?
Yes, there is.
And it is 352-3443, 352-3443, 1-800. And we encourage you again to investigate, research, and do all of the good stuff that you need to do to disconnecting from everything. I mean, I used to have 4, 5, or 6 different news feeds on my phone and my tablet. And I got to a point after September 2016, it took me 6 months to get unsucked, if you will, from getting sucked into the whole political thing. And it's like, I can't live like this anymore. This is just, this is ridiculous. I'm not doing this, which is one of the reasons why it took me so long to get back on Facebook. And I don't follow anybody, and I only friend and follow relatives. I follow my nieces and my sisters and my parents and a few close friends that I know on the website. A buddy of mine, he was at dinner with his wife once, and somebody walked up to him and said, "Hi, we're friends on Facebook." He didn't know this guy from Adam, and it freaked him out.
Yeah.
So, that's just my way of doing things. But I want to thank you so much. I want to thank you so much for being on the program and sharing all of this great information. And before we let you go, first of all, should you find yourself down here or up here in Santa Barbara, we would love to have you in studio to continue this conversation. And I also have 3 final questions for you before we let you go. And again, great appreciation and gratitude for so much time here on the program. And to our listeners,
my pleasure.
Letting them know that this interview isn't just 50 minutes long if you're listening to the radio broadcast. It goes on and on. And we talked for a while, quite a while, beyond the 50-minute radio broadcast time. So go to either SoundCloud or iTunes or the radio show's page at richarddugan.com to listen to the entire interview. And so my final 3 questions for you, Marilyn, are, first of all, who is Marilyn Joyce?
Well, I would say that I am a peace catalyst, the catalyst for peace and for change, and my soul's desire is to see peace on earth in our lifetime. So I would say that that's really who I am. You know, I'm a universal spirit. I've always had an openness to all of us being one and one of us being all. And so that's really who the soul of who I am is. And who I am in life is someone who is a compassionate caretaker or caregiver. And when I work with people, I'm working with them on a mental, physical, emotional, and spiritual level, the whole person, because that's who we are. We're whole persons. We're not pieces of a, you know, we're out a physical piece and a mental piece and an emotional piece and a spiritual piece. We're all one entity. And so, you know, it's really, that's, I would say in a nutshell, that's who I am, frankly.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
Oh, absolutely and completely. It goes back to that whole thing of, you know, bringing people together globally based on that question, what matters now after you've lost someone, something, or everything you thought was important to you. You know, it's really about bringing people together regardless of race, creed, color, religion, or philosophy, based on that question, what matters now, and the realization that we are all the same at the deepest level. We all have the same color of blood running through our veins, and we all have a soul that craves love, connection, and the experience of love, of peace with each other, you know, the tolerance and peace, et cetera. So that's really what I want. That's my vision before I leave this planet, and it's to leave a legacy worth remembering.
And finally, what is your life's purpose?
My life's purpose is to bring people together as one in love and unity, and to really, through the work that I do, whether it's speaking or writing, to change the planet by literally saving lives one life at a time, to really inspire people to take their to take responsibility for their own lives, to come from a place of reaching out to one another, to become interdependent in our connections, so that we understand that by helping others, we're helping ourselves and we're helping the planet. So it's a win-win-win.
I like the I like that. That's a wonderful thing, and I'm really excited about the prospects for our future. And you know, I've shared my pessimism from time to time. I'm usually a very optimistic person, and I want to try to keep that if I can. And
you know, it's okay, Richard, to be pessimistic sometimes, because it's, again, the opposite of optimism, right? So unless you experience the opposite, you don't really fully understand the, you know, the wonderfulness of optimism.
That's a good point. That's a very good point. That's why
as long
we do
as you
this.
Don't stay there too long, right?
Exactly. Exactly. I don't like being there any more than I like listening to some of the diatribes that go on, you know, in reference to a lot of the stuff that's going on in the world. It's like, how is name calling productive? How is that solving the problem? Let's get back to sitting around a table, throwing ideas out there to try to solve the problems that we're dealing with. Because what's going on right now, it's not cutting it. It's just not. And I'm hoping that people will pick up a copy of your book. I want to, again, remind our listeners of the website, which is thestresstosuccessformula.com. And Dr. Marilyn Joyce, again, thank you so much for giving us so much time here on the program. We really do appreciate it. And I do hope you can make it out here here in studio again. But we would love to have you back on the program again to continue this conversation regardless.
Thank you so much, Richard. I always enjoy our conversations and our time together. And I would be honored to come to the studio again and spend time with you.
Great.
For sure.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love, Talal.